In radio and television, it's RCA all the way. The Radio Corporation of America presents The Magic Key of RCA. Your host, the family of RCA, whose members include RCA Communications, RCA Victor, our Radio Marine, RCA Laboratories, and the National Broadcasting Company. Magic Key turns, opening the door to a magic hour of radio entertainment and headline variety. For your interest and pleasure, the internationally famous prima donna of opera, screen, radio, and the concert stage, Grace Moore. A special Lincoln Day appreciation conducted by the town crier, Alexander Wolcott. At the twin pianos, Byron Yanis and Joyce Paul, each 10 years old. Harmonies from Dixie by the J. Rosamond Johnson Choir, and our own conductor, Frank Black, opening the program as the Magic Key Orchestra brings us the overture to Thomas Le Caïd. Thank you.
It is with pleasure that we announce the forthcoming appearance on the Magic Key of Ignatz Jan Paderewski in person. We had the privilege recently of presenting by shortwave from abroad as part of this program a concert by the world's most famous pianist. This time we shall be honored with Paderewski's actual presence in the studio, playing a lavish selection from his incomparable repertoire. His appearance on this program will be preliminary to a tour of 22 cities arranged by NBC Artist Service. Make a note now. Paderewski in person on the Magic Key program, 2 p.m. Sunday, February 26th. The date again, February 26th.
Only a few years ago, a slight, charming girl named Grace Moore came to New York from Tennessee as an aspiring singer. Since then, her career has been a brilliant, continued success story, climaxed 2 weeks ago when the French government awarded her the Legion of Honor for her contribution to the musical art of France, the first American soprano to receive this honor. Today, the Magic Key takes pleasure in bringing to you the popular star of opera, radio, screen, and the concert stage, Miss Grace Moore. From the first act of Massenet's opera Herodiade, Grace Moore sings the inspired aria, Il est doux, il est bon, he is sweet, he is good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Miss Moore. We look forward to hearing you again later in our program.
Hear ye! Hear ye! Hear ye, Alexander Wolcott, the town crier!
The Magic Key program falls upon a notable anniversary, and we have come to dedicate a portion of that program to the memory of Abraham Lincoln, as recalled to you now by Mr. Wolcott.
Four score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now, we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. That was Lincoln speaking. Speaking at Gettysburg 75 years ago. Speaking in the darkest days of the Civil War. Speaking to a multitude of 15,000 standing in the autumn sunshine on Cemetery Hill. A speech, now memorized by every schoolboy in any land where English is spoken or read. A speech which in the long history of human liberty calls back across the centuries as mountaintop to mountaintop signals back to the funeral oration of Pericles. A peculiarly American speech, which will certainly last as long as America does, and perhaps longer. What Lincoln said at Gettysburg will still be part of the human heritage, still be remembered as a great moment in the story of mankind, when the center of civilization may well have shifted elsewhere, when San Francisco and Chicago, yes, and Washington, too, are one with Nineveh and Tyre. Gettysburg Address, when it was spoken for the first time, made no stir at all. In the newspapers next day, plenty of attention was accorded the ceremonies themselves, but nearly all of it went to the fine flight of old-fashioned oratory, a discourse lasting two mortal hours, with which, before Lincoln rose to speak, Edward Everett had first rung the Gettysburg welkin. Next day, for several reasons, the space in the papers all went to Everett. And the president, oh yes, Mr. Lincoln also made a few remarks. That was the general effect. For a time, it looked as if the world would little note, nor long remember. But you may ask, what about the people actually present? What was the effect of the speech on them?
Time.
What? Yes, thanks. That interruption was a signal. My friend Mr. Cross has been holding a stopwatch over me. I asked him to break in when I'd spoken exactly 2 minutes and 35 seconds. I'll explain why later. Now, let's see, where were we? Oh, yes, about Lincoln's speech. What was its effect on the audience at Gettysburg? I'll tell you. Almost nil. And I'm sure I know why. They didn't hear it. The great majority didn't. If you and I had been at Gettysburg when Lincoln spoke, the chances are 10 to 1... we wouldn't have heard what he said. Let me see if I can show you why this must have been so. Just think of any play you've ever been to. Did you note how the playwright was mighty careful to postpone any important matter until after the first 10 minutes? Not merely because stragglers would still be coming down the aisles, falling over feet, banging the seats, and rattling programs, but also because between the human voice and the human ear, there's something, well, call it the arc of attention. In the theater, it takes a bit of time to establish that arc's trajectory. And not only in the theater. If you haven't yet been cured of after-dinner oratory, note at your next banquet how any experienced speaker always devotes his first 2 or 3 minutes to saying nothing at all, so that his listeners, with their varying rates of adjustment, can be tuning in. When a gathering is held under the sky, the need for such purely vocal preliminaries is doubled, trebled. Now, at Gettysburg, Mr. Lincoln spoke not only in the open air, and mind you, long before the days of amplifiers, but to an audience of 15,000 that wasn't even standing still. Remember that that audience had just been trapped by a two-hour harangue. When Mr. Everett did sit down, what did that audience do? Applaud? Yes, of course. But during the welcome singing of a hymn, many started to move toward the exits, and you know why. When across that moving crowd, word spread like a ripple of wind across a grain field that the president had risen to speak, some of the runaways turned in their tracks and started shoving back to the rostrum. So it wasn't only to a huge crowd in the open air that Lincoln spoke, but to one that wasn't even stationary. Before even the few within easy reach of his voice could really have begun to listen, he'd have had to talk for at least 5 minutes. 5 minutes? Long before that, Mr. Lincoln had finished and sat down. After all, the Gettysburg Address is only 10 sentences. It consists, did you know, of only 272 words. Mr. Lincoln spoke for just 2 minutes and 35 seconds. You know how long that is? A little while ago, we tried to measure it for you, tried to give you a sense of just how long 2 minutes and 35 seconds is. Remember? It's no time at all. Why, I'd hardly got started when Mr. Cross stopped me. Isn't it therefore clear, beyond all doubt, that of the 15,000 at Gettysburg, only an inconsiderable few really heard what Lincoln said? This much any speaker would know, and mark you, none better than Lincoln himself. Lincoln, who in his campaigns had spoken by torchlight to many a milling crossroads crowd. No one in this country ever knew better how to make an audience listen. Any audience. That crowd at Gettysburg would have heard everything he had to say, if he'd cared 2 cents, whether they heard him or not. So he can't have cared. Why not? There's only one answer. He wasn't speaking to them. Well, then, to whom was he speaking? Not long ago, I put that question to a man who knows as much about the Civil War as anyone of my acquaintance, John W. Thomason, Jr., of the United States Marines. By way of answer, Colonel Thomason told me about a letter he once found in a trunk in a Texas attic. A letter written in 63 by a young Confederate captain who'd been wounded at Gettysburg and was still there on crutches 4 months later when the battlefield was dedicated. That Texan must have been one of the scattered few, there are such in every audience, who did hear what Lincoln said. To his father back home, the young Southerner wrote, "Pop, we've got to stop fighting that man." Wherefore, the colonel thinks that if Lincoln were indifferent to those present at Gettysburg, it was because, over their heads, he was talking to the South. It is my own notion, I can't escape it, that over the heads of the South, he was talking also and perhaps chiefly to posterity. Talking to Americans who on that day at Gettysburg were as yet unborn and unbegot. For all Lincoln knew, it was the last chance he'd have. Always there was a strong sense of doom upon him. And anyway, in November 63, he couldn't be sure there was ever going to be a second inaugural. While there was yet time, he wanted to state his case. To state it in words so simple that everyone could understand it, and in words so few that everyone could remember it. The ceremonies at Gettysburg gave him his chance. He took it. But in the America of yesterday, in the soft, easy America in which I grew up, the Gettysburg Address had begun to lose its meaning. Of course, we knew the words by rote, but did we know them by heart? On every possible occasion, we recited them, but did we hear them? It dawns on me that, like the milling crowd at Gettysburg, we never really heard them at all. Until now. Until today. Today, quite suddenly, those words have taken on the meaning he must always have meant them to have. Conceived in liberty. The words come to life. They get up and walk. They bestride the world. Whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure, well, can ours? Are you so sure? Since first they were spoken, have those words ever had such painful immediacy as they seem to have right now? Have they ever meant as much as on this 12th of February in the year 1939 they mean to us? In an age when bandits on horseback the world around are challenging all that Lincoln had and was, the words he spoke at Gettysburg long ago wake us from our sleep, sound across the world like a trumpet. Will we hear him, really hear him, at last? There's still time. Let's get closer to the platform and listen. Mr. Lincoln has reached his final paragraph. It is for us, the living, rather to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. Thus, Mr. Lincoln at Gettysburg, 75 years ago, it is for us, the living, rather to be dedicated here. For whom was that speech meant? There's your answer, in his own words. For us. For us, the living. For us to resolve and see to it, and see to it, that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We asked Mr. Wolcott what special music he thought would be most appropriate for any program commemorative of Abraham Lincoln. He answered, "The music of Negro voices raised in song." Therefore,
"Hush, pick your battle of Jericho, 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 Lord. Hush, pick your battle of Jericho, and the walls come tumbling down. Hush, pick your battle of Jericho, 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 and the walls come tumbling down.
Lord,
Joshua, at the battle of Jericho, up to the walls of Jericho, he marched with spear in hand. Though blood and ram horn, Joshua cried, "Is the battle in my hand?"
Then the ram ran, sheep horn began to blow, the trumpet began to sound. Joshua commanded the children to shout, and the walls come tumbling down.
The Lord in
God, Jericho, Jericho, Jericho,
Joshua beat the battle on Jericho, and the walls come down. Good luck.
That was the J. Rosamond Johnson Choir and Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho. J. Rosamond Johnson, Negro pioneer in the field of American music, now conducts the choir in the traditional hymn of his race, "Go Down, Moses."
Oh,
When Abraham Lincoln was 17 years old, another American was born, destined to live forever in the hearts of his countrymen, Stephen Foster, the beloved American composer. The songs he has written, such as Old Black Joe, My Old Kentucky Home, Oh Susanna, have come to be looked upon as the perfect symbol of the days in which he and Abraham Lincoln lived. Lincoln bequeathed us a renewed nation. Foster enriched that nation with the musical outpourings of his heart. RCA Victor has collected the finest and most representative of Foster's musical works in the Stephen Foster album, with glowing interpretations by Richard Crooks, assisted by the Balladeers. All of Foster's warmth and charm is brought to life with an artistry which carries us back to the old plantation days when cotton was king and such modern miracles as phonograph records were not yet dreamed of. Victor Records bring the voice of Richard Crooks, the songs of Stephen Foster, directly into your home to enjoy when you please. Like turning the pages of a book and reviving old memories, you can place Victor Records on your Victrola. Bring to life Old Folks at Home, Masses into Cold, Cold Ground, and many another Foster song. But why not hear these records for yourself? Drop in at your nearest Victor Record dealers tomorrow. Ask to hear selections from the Stephen Foster album of Victor Records played on a 1939 RCA Victrola.
Listen for the familiar NBC chimes, your signal for fine radio entertainment.
Magic Key of RCA.
Resuming our program with a modern American symphonic novelty in which the instruments of the orchestra reproduce the sounds of gaiety at a country barn dance. Frank Black conducts the Magic Key Orchestra in Robert Sanders' new composition, Saturday Night. stage now are two huge and shiny grand pianos. Seated at the pianos, their feet barely touching the pedals, are two tiny performers whose virtuosity at the twin keyboards has astounded eminent musical authorities who have heard them play at New York's Chatham Square Music School. Byron Yanis, who is 10, is small, dark, and handsome. He indignantly refuses to be called cute. Joyce Paul, also 10, is a picture of little girl loveliness, including a blue hair ribbon and blonde curls. Together, Byron Yanis and Joyce Paul prove that they are serious artists with their two piano interpretation of Emion, or Wild Horses, taken from Cezanne's Carnival of Animals. Two youthful artists now turn to an old master. We hear the Siciliano of Johann Sebastian Bach. Thank you. As an encore, Byron Yanis and Joyce Paul, each 10 years old, play Danse Nègre by the English composer Cyril Scott. We are pleased to welcome to our program once again that star of opera, radio, concert hall, and screen, Miss Grace Moore. For her second appearance on our program today, Miss Moore graciously bows to popular demand in singing for us a traditional favorite revived by the distinguished violinist-composer Fritz Kreisler. We hear the old refrain.
Memory without the pain.
As an encore, a popular song of the day, from the motion picture, The King Steps Out, Grace Moore sings, Stars in My Eyes.
My song has wings, eternal springs, no longer bold to dream. My cheeks are glowing.
So many changes are taking place throughout the world these days that one feels almost lost without a radio, rather with a radio which does not bring in foreign broadcasts. A few years ago, only the most expensive radios included this feature, but nearly all the 1939 RCA Victor radios include both domestic and foreign reception, and at prices within everyone's reach. Why not replace your old radio with a modern RCA Victor radio, which includes all the up-to-date features for complete radio enjoyment? Prices need not hinder you. RCA Victor Table Model 96X1 costs only $14.95 FOB Camden, New Jersey, yet gives you, along with domestic broadcast, a wide range of foreign reception. Check these additional features. New, easy-to-read, full-vision dial. Performance that rivals that of many full-size table models. Cabinets in smart modern styling and four attractive finishes of molded plastic. Walnut with ivory knobs, black, ivory, and walnut trimmed in tan. Two of these models are equipped with push-button tuning. This extra service costs only a few dollars more. If you're looking for a real radio for the guest room, library, bedroom, or sun porch, ask your RCA Victor dealer to show you RCA Victor Model 96X1, the radio which gives you radio entertainment from North and South America, Europe, and Asia, at less than the price you are accustomed to paying for a standard broadcast receiver.
The orchestra have just played Northwards from Eric Coates' Four Way Suite.
RCA Institute's one of the services of the Radio Corporation of America is a technical school open to the public and offering courses in all technical branches of the radio art. New classes of the spring term will begin on Monday, March 6th, and applications for enrollment are now being accepted. Schools are maintained in New York City and Chicago.
The members of the family of RCA, RCA Victor, RCA Laboratories, RCA Communications, Radio Marine, and the National Broadcasting Company, invite you to tune in again next Sunday for another full hour of radio entertainment. At that time, you will hear another hilarious episode from the lives of Mr. and Mrs. Whalen, starring Sarah Allgood and Whitford Kane, returning by popular demand to play the title roles. A visit by radio to the San Francisco World's Fair, with the Magic Keys microphones bringing you all the highlights of the great carnival. Melodic excerpts from some of Gilbert and Sullivan's most popular and beloved operettas, featuring distinguished soloists and a chorus, and Frank Black conducting the Magic Key Orchestra. Cross speaking for all the services of the Radio Corporation of America.
And Ben Grauer saying that in radio and television, it's RCA all the way.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.